Next case on our calendar is 95-1675, Virginia Pangle et al. Versus Doyle Joyce. Justice Douglas has recused himself in this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Douglas, Judge Dana Deschler, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 10th District. Welcome back, Mr. Deschler. Mr. Walensky.
May it please the Court. The defendants in this case appeal from an order granting plaintiff's motion for a new trial after the jury returned a verdict in favor of the defendants. The trial court granted the plaintiff's motion for a new trial on one ground. The plaintiffs had moved on three. They moved on the grounds that the verdict was against the manifest weight of the evidence, for misconduct of counsel, and third, because the verdict, according to the plaintiffs, was contrary to law. The Court of Appeals affirmed the trial court's ruling on the single ground that the verdict was contrary to law. Two issues in this case beg for this court's guidance. Both of them pertain to motions for new trial granted under Rule 59, Civil Rule 59. The first question raised by this case is whether expert testimony and documents or tangible evidence introduced through an expert, as a matter of law, stand on an inferior or different footing from that of lay witnesses, such that a trial judge may simply ignore the opinions of experts and tangible evidence introduced by experts when ruling on a motion for a new trial under Rule 59. The opinions of both courts below reveal that neither the trial court nor the Court of Appeals took any account whatsoever of the testimony, the opinion of defense experts, either truly or, more importantly, of a tangible piece of evidence introduced by or through that expert.
Why do you say that?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Why do you say that? You said they took no account of their testimony.
There is no evidence in either opinion acknowledging that there was tangible evidence before the jury in the form of Defendant's Exhibit S, or in the opinion of expert Peter Cooley, that supported the jury's verdict. The question in the case was, on the motion for a new trial, whether there was evidence in the record sufficient to support the jury's verdict. No account, no recognition of the existence of either of those pieces of evidence appears either in the Court of Appeals or in the trial court. The trial court in particular said there was no credible evidence to support the facts revealed.
By their not mentioning it in their opinion, you have a doubt that it's sufficient to say it is considered.
They took no account of it. They took account of other pieces of evidence, but no account of these two pieces of evidence which directly support the jury's verdict.
When you say account of it, do you mean mention of it?
They make no mention of it.
Okay. So does that mean that you feel that they didn't consider it?
Because one can only conclude that, Your Honor, from the express statements that there was either no evidence or no credible evidence of precisely the propositions for which both the tangible evidence and the testimonial evidence stand. One can only infer that when they say there isn't any, and in fact there was, that they didn't take any account of it.
But as you suggested, the trial judge did say there is no credible evidence that the plaintiff's vehicle ever completely left route U.S. Route 127 southbound, right on 81. That, I guess, your argument is that whether someone agrees or doesn't agree with the expert's reconstruction of the accident, that it's at least credible.
That's correct, Your Honor. The evidence, the opinion of expert Peter Cooley was admitted without objection and without limitation. So too was Defendant's Exhibit S, which is the videotape of the four sequences of reenactments, each showing a slightly different path reconstructed for the buyer vehicle at the intersection. Now, we, recognizing that videos are a piece of technology with which the court may not handily be able to deal, we have attached to the brief at tab 8 four freeze frames from that video. That is one set, those are four freeze frames from the fourth sequence. It is the sequence showing the widest departure that the buyer vehicle could have made from southbound 127 and still have reached the point of impact. The three previous ones have slightly shallower turns. Now, we're prepared to offer the court freeze frames from each of those three other reenactments if the court's technology is such that it doesn't have the ability to review the hard tape. The tape is in the
record. Not terribly advanced technologically, but we are that. But we'll consider, we'll confer on that, and then we'll let you know.
We have the freeze frames. I'm happy to share them with counsel. We took them when we realized that perhaps we couldn't show this video in court today, and that's what caused us to be prepared to offer these additional freeze frames today.
Counselor, let me ask you about another piece of the puzzle here, and that is, in your brief, you highlighted a testimony of two sheriff's deputies.
That's correct.
And the reference is such that I have to assume that what you're referring to, that what they said was admitted, that was in the record. What Grimes and the other party, Matthews.
That's correct.
That's in the record.
Those are taken from the record references.
Did the trial judge, I don't recall it, and I read the decision, but did he assess that testimony at all?
Did not mention it, Your Honor. Again, all he said was either no evidence or no credible evidence on propositions for which some of their testimony was probative. We can only infer that the court took no account because it categorically said no evidence, no credible evidence of propositions that were in the record and that did support the jury's verdict and answered special interrogatory.
One other quick question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the trial judge instruct on comparative negligence in this matter?
I believe it did, Your Honor. Yes.
So the jury had the full, generally full instruction on comparative, that is to assess the degrees, et cetera.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
The court granted the motion for a new trial on the grounds that the verdict was contrary to law on this syllogism. It held that Ohio law obliged Doyle Joyce, the defendant driver of the semi, to afford an assured clear distance to any object in the right-of-way ahead. Now, the right-of-way was the court's own phrase. That's not the phrase in the statute. That's not Ohio law. But that was the proposition of law that the court set in its order.
I read that. What is the right-of-way here? Do you think in the judge's mind? I wasn't sure what that is.
Well, one can only infer, Your Honor, that they regarded the right-of-way as within the white lines. And that is not what the law of Ohio is. The law of Ohio is the path of travel. And that is something narrower than the right-of-way. This court has held precisely that. The minor factual premise of the trial court's ruling was that there was, to quote the court, no credible evidence that the buyer vehicle ever completely left southbound 127, the southbound right-of-way, onto westbound State Route 81. That was the minor factual premise. The conclusion, therefore, was that Doyle Joyce was never relieved of his statutory obligation to afford the assured clear distance. The issues in this case arise out of that court's finding of no credible evidence.
And yet, was there another witness, an independent witness, that testified regarding that fact?
There was, Your Honor. And that was a witness whom the Court of Appeals held on page 9 of its opinion that it was appropriate for the trial judge to disregard that witness's testimony because the trial judge could have concluded that that witness was not in a position to see what the witness testified to. We maintain, Your Honor, that that is one instance where the Court of Appeals itself ventured into assessment of credibility, assessment of the evidence, weighing of the evidence, something that we admit is fully proper for the trial court and the Court of Appeals to have done if they were ruling on a motion for a new trial as against the manifest weight. That didn't happen here. This is contrary to law. The obligation of the trial judge and of the Court of Appeals was to accept as fact every evidence in the record that supported the jury's verdict. And from that set of facts, apply the law in order to determine whether the jury was in accordance with, the verdict was in accordance with the law. There's no dispute in this case, so far as I'm able to determine, that Mr. Cooley testified as the record reveals, nor that the videotape shows four distinct ways that that buyer vehicle could have departed the southbound path of travel and still have reached the point of impact. The way the plaintiffs and the Court of Appeals dealt with this fact that the Court of Appeals didn't mention was simply to say that the trial judge could find that there was no credible evidence to support the defendant's contention that the buyer vehicles left the southbound path of travel. Again, a court could well make the determination about the manifest weight, but to have done so would have required the court to do what this trial court did not do, what the Court of Appeals began to do on the appeal, and what the appellant appellees have done in their brief, and that is to explain the whole body of evidence that the trial judge might have had in mind when it assessed the credibility of the witnesses, assessed the evidence differently from what the jury apparently did. The Court of Appeals decision, I think, is the best evidence of this court's need to address the difference between the factual analysis that a court must make under 59A6, manifest weight, and 59A7, contrary to law. The Court of Appeals itself, in four instances in its opinion, ventures into evaluation of the record rather than identifying the existence of facts in the record. It draws its own inference from skid marks in the northbound lane, misstates the facts while doing so, but makes an independent assessment with respect to facts. It makes an independent assessment with respect to the physical impact of the vehicles, and in doing so, accepts one expert's view without mentioning the other expert's view on precisely that evidence. And third, and most importantly, it approved the trial court's right to disregard evidence of lay witnesses because they believe that witness may well have been successfully impeached on cross-examination.
There wasn't any expert testimony regarding the ability of the driver of the first truck to view the position of the Jeep through his rearview mirror.
No, Your Honor, it was his testimony that he's precisely what he saw. He said he saw it making the turn, he looked back, saw the car coming back across the intersection and the collision.
Was there evidence upon which the trial judge could have concluded that that truck driver could not have seen the position of the car because of where the truck was and because he's looking at his rearview mirror?
Well, we really don't know that because the trial judge didn't go through the analysis of the evidence that he should have done if he had made a manifest weight assessment. The witness said he saw the buyer vehicle turn right.
I wonder if that's what the trial judge meant by credible evidence. The trial judge concluded that that driver of the other truck simply could not have seen what he said he saw.
Well, he said he saw it. On cross-examination, the mirror and the contention arose that he didn't. That was not... the success of the attempted impeachment was something for the jury to assess, not for the trial judge. We urge the court to accept as a to clarify the distinction between 59A6 and 59A7, both of which undeniably, according to this court, require the trial judge to review the trial record. We urge the court to differentiate the kind of factual analysis the trial judge must make when assessing the evidence on a manifest weight basis from the kind of assessment of the record it must make in...
Counsel, before you sit down, is the trial court entitled to any presumptions here?
No, Your Honor. This is, as the court itself noted, as the Court of Appeals affirmed, this is a ruling as a matter of law. This error, this appeal is tested as a matter of error. Not, there's no discretion afforded to a factual determination. That's the distinction the court drew in Roe versus Farmer.
Okay, I guess the presumption I'm asking about is aren't you asking us to make some assumptions about what the trial court did or did not look at or how carefully it considered certain issues?
No, Your Honor. We're saying we're not asking you to make any assumption. The court decided in Anatol versus Old World Products that you're not going to get involved in making assumptions about what the trial judge does when it reviews the evidence. When it reviews the evidence, as it did on a manifest weight in Anatol, put it in your opinion. Just don't say there's no evidence to support. That's what this judge did. It did exactly what the trial judge did in Anatol and for which it was reversed, but attempted to avoid the reversal by saying this wasn't a manifest weight determination I was making, it's a contrary to law. It tried to have it both ways in this one case. It tried to have the right to pick and choose, as he may well have thought was appropriate, between witnesses' testimony and exhibits, but then have absolved himself of the burdensome responsibility of satisfying Anatol versus Old World Products, which had required him to have laid out in his opinion why he assessed the credibility of the witnesses differently from what was evidenced in the trial jury's verdict.
Thank you, Mr. Walensky. Mr. Garris.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Garris. I represent Virginia Pangle as guardian ad litem of Tim Byer. My co-counsel is Mark Birchfield, also a solo practitioner. Judge Warner specifically talks to the issue of the credibility of the expert witness when he talks about the attitude of the wreck. One of the things that you have to look at what is not disputed at the point of impact, which is 13 foot by their expert's determination. My expert has it a little bit higher. Their expert puts it 13 foot above the center line of 81 if it was extended through the intersection. That makes it all the way right at the top of the northeast section of that intersection. This is set. We know that. The skid marks are all in the northbound lane for the semi. There is no dispute that this 8-foot wide semi left all its skid marks in a 12-foot wide lane. And if you were to continue the yellow line and the white line on through the intersection, all the way through the intersection, this 8-foot wide truck left skid marks.
Your point is that the truck went left of center, over the center line, and that thereby violated the law. I guess it looks as if, well, one version would be that he was going around the Jeep as it was turning right to swerve around it. There's a dispute, I guess, as to whether he actually went over the line or not, but your contention is the skid marks show he did.
Yeah, there's no dispute on that.
The other, I guess, is that he was over the line, that he shouldn't have been over the line. He simply was violating the law. That's
right. Now, they say they don't, judge didn't take into consideration their expert.
Well, so if it's that clear cut, should the judge have an obligation just to direct the verdict on the issue of negligence?
I maybe should have asked that, but after 5 days of trial, I didn't request that of the court.
Did the first trucker, the trucker in front testify as a person?
Yes, he did.
Did you cross-examine him?
Yes, I did.
Did you ask him why the interest in the truck behind him, and why he called back and said, hey, the Jeep's going to make a right-hand turn? What possible motive did the front truck driver have to tell the back truck driver that the Jeep was making a right-hand turn?
There's no evidence to it, but the truckers drive really close together. This trucker, as a matter of fact, Mr. Joyce, on cross-examination, when I asked him, how long the distance did you have from the Jeep when you first saw it, he said, about a truck length. They drive right together, the front one calls it, what's going on, and they just are almost bumper to bumper as they go down the road.
There's not evidence of that, is there? I assume that's your
evidence
practical observation.
By Mr. Joyce. No, there's evidence by Mr. Joyce in cross-examination.
The truck length.
He was only able to see Tim Byers' truck, our Jeep, for one truck length. He did say that on cross-examination. But this here is material that was made by Mr. Cool, taking the specifications by the manufacturer. Mr. Cooley designed these. He did the map of the intersection, a car here, or a Jeep there. This is a scale model, all the Jeep and intersection. We have over here where the accident would have occurred, undisputed, and the Jeep has to be going in a northerly direction to get there.
I love that videotape.
They hadn't introduced it, I would have. Because it is undisputed that only collision damage on the Jeep, with this being the front part, is from the front wheel well on the driver's side going backwards. Both Mr. Cooley's diagrams of the tightest turning radius and this video has the Jeep going back like that to make the contact.
So is this a, this does strike me as a manifest for the argument instead of contrary to law. Tell us how it is.
Your Honor, the Jeep has no damage to the front nor this front corner. How can it get back? And the judge says there's no credible evidence for the attitude. You know, we're not arguing that it can't get back if it goes completely off the road. Because even Mr. Joyce says, and the video shows, it's down about 18 foot down this way, the 24th foot, and 16 foot away from the point of impact. This being north. You can only go north by going north. Okay? This Jeep has to go north.
Should we put that in stone someplace?
What?
Should we carve that in stone someplace?
Well,
go ahead.
I'd like to see it carved in stone. Okay?
If the evidence is so clear, how did the jury lose its way? What evidence did the jury rely on to make the conclusion? If the evidence in your opinion is so clear the other way?
I can't use the testimony of the dissenting juror in court, but basically the jury didn't follow the jury instruction. They implied that the young men should have been out and the truck driver was doing his job. They disregarded the jury instructions because also...
That's your theory.
Your
claim that they made.
Under Rule 59, I can't use it to impeach the jury.
You wouldn't want that to influence our decision here, would you?
Counsel, let me get back to the rules under which the trial court is operating as far as the actual issue of granting a new trial and why we are here on this thing. It's clear, I guess there's no dispute, that the court granted a new trial on the basis of there being an error of law, as opposed to under the other rule of 59-6 and the weight of the evidence. I assume it's your contention that the trial court, under consideration of the motion for new trial pursuant to 59-7, has the ability to accept and reject evidence that's in the record. Is that your view?
I think the court has some jurisdiction. We don't. I think it would be, to point this out maybe a little bit clearer, if you have a murder case and the knife is in the back, if the knife is stuck in the back, and you had an expert come up and said, well, you can kill this person by stabbing him in the front, even though there's no hole here. That's how the person was stabbed in the front. Well, no, and you have the same thing here. They're telling that, and they go for perpendicular. They argue that it was perpendicular. To make this perpendicular, this truck is not going is not coming down 127 in the northbound lane. The back end's out in the cornfield. Okay? We're under their condition, we're enforcing a trial judge to say, no matter how stupid or how impossible it is that you say, I have to accept what you're telling me. And, the truck driver, he says he saw the truck later on, or the Jeep, for a quarter of a mile. Okay, his testimony is that this Jeep is going south on 127. He is driving at 50 miles per hour. According to his testimony, he's coming down 127 in the southbound lane following the Jeep. He winds over, according to him, that doesn't mean going over into the northbound lane, but right along the white line to pass this Jeep. We have a problem. You have a 12-foot wide lane, you have a 6-foot 2-inch wide Jeep, and you have an 8-foot wide truck. Okay? He's going to hit the Jeep. We have a truck driver who's saying, I'm going to drive by that Jeep in the lane that he's traveling with an 8-foot wide truck and a 6-foot wide Jeep. My old math shows that we've got a 2-foot difference that the Jeep's going to lose out on. And, even further, because of where this accident happened, the point of the collision, okay, you put the Jeep here, turning this way, okay, if the Jeep had turned this way, He would still not have been on 81 heading west when he would have gone through. And the truck driver said he never went left to center until the victim went left to center, until Mr. Meyer went left to center, until he went to turn. Okay, this truck driver claims to be in the southbound lane until my client goes left to center, and then he goes left of center. My client goes to turn, and then the truck driver comes over and takes him out. When the law of Ohio, if it isn't that truck drivers have to slow down for vehicles ahead of them, that they have to respect the no passing zone at an intersection, and they can just wipe out whoever's ahead of them, then we're going to have to stay off the highways and in the rural country counties, because the truck drivers won't have any problem. But when they can not have a sure clear distance, when it doesn't matter if they pass at an intersection, I mean, it's dangerous.
Let me ask you, is it your contention, I assume it is, and it seems to be the trial judge's contention, that the Jeep doesn't become a sudden emergency until the entire Jeep, until all of the Jeep is on Route 81. Is that right?
Right.
That if it, no matter how apparent it seems to be to the vehicle following the Jeep, that the Jeep is making a right-hand turn, such as it's halfway through the turn, that the Jeep still has the right-of-way with respect to a sure clear distance. That's the basis upon which the trial judge apparently.
Right. And to answer a point that you asked, excuse me, I missed your name.
Deschler.
About the sheriff's deputies. On cross-examination, I asked them, was there anything wrong other than the turn signal? And they said no. So they're trying to imply that the deputies are agreeing that the Jeep went off of 127 and onto 81, they're wrong. Because the deputy said no, there was nothing wrong other than the turn signal.
Sorry, are you indicating that really coming from behind, the only thing that indicated that the car was going to make the right turn at all was the turn signal, and that the movement of the car didn't indicate a right-hand turn?
The car may have been going at one point in time, it was going a little bit to the right.
But it had never at any time made a turn off of the road and then came back in front of the truck.
No, and their diagrams show that you can't do that unless the Jeep is headed north at impact. And there is no collision damage heading north.
No, but the other expert says it could have. Says that in fact it could have happened that way. And that isn't that our problem, that the trial judge appeared to, on a motion for new trial, appeared to weigh the evidence, appeared to say, I believe this evidence and not that evidence, and called it a matter of law.
The other expert said that it happened perpendicular. We know where this truck was at.
It's your position then that the other expert, his testimony was not credible. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Because he has the crash coming here. Look at that video. There's no damage to the Jeep that can apply to that video. We know this truck is here because of the skid marks and everything, undisputed. And for this truck to have been hit perpendicular, it would have had to come out of the westbound lane where it was had just supposedly turned and come right back out. Those things didn't happen. There's a lot of talk that the judge only has this on a matter of law. There's nowhere in his opinion that he denied the... I believe there's no place in the opinion. I was reading it late last night again that he denied the weight of the evidence. It's just that he said I find it contrary to law, but yet he did not deny in that opinion that it was not the weight of the evidence.
Well, the Court of Appeals certainly did, because Judge Bryan, I guess it was, said precisely that the majority decided on a question of law, and it should have been decided on manifest weight. That's the way I read Judge Bryan's. So
right.
It appears that is an issue for us, isn't it, to decide whether this should have been decided as a manifest weight issue or question of law.
There's a situation of, how much, evidence, because a judge, a court has to look at evidence to decide the issue of law. Okay? Courts don't decide moot issues. If the court does not look at evidence, it can't make a decision on or wrong.
Your contention, it seems to me, just so I understand, because I had some difficulty understanding exactly what the contention was to which way the Jeep was going. There were references to the Jeep going north on 127. It seems to me it would have been going east on 81, wouldn't it? I mean, if the testimony of the kids was right, the driver and the passengers was right, that they told him first to turn right, or he started to turn right, and said, oh, no, we want to go east on 81, he wouldn't have been going back north on 127, would he?
No, and that's what their experts show. That's what the video is going to show when you watch it, is the Jeep's going north on 127. The Jeep turned. Look at the pictures of the accident. Look at the pictures of the vehicle. The Jeep made a turn and got clipped. And the truck driver said he never went left of center until the Jeep made its turn first.
Was there a stop sign on, this is an intersection of two state routes, was there a stop sign on 81? I assume there was not on 127.
Yes, Your Honor, a stop sign on 81.
So if the Jeep had made a full U-turn, shouldn't the Jeep have stopped then before proceeding through 127? Is that ever argued, never presented?
No, never argued.
That's the other thing I couldn't understand, why there wouldn't have been argument that if he made this big U-turn and he actually left 127 and was now on 81 and then turned, go east on 81, why the stop sign wouldn't have stopped it, at least.
We basically have a truck driver who is not going to slow down. He knows there's a car up ahead that's making a turn. He is saying that he's going to drive his 8-foot-wide truck past a 6-foot-wide Jeep in a 12-foot-wide lane and never applied the brakes, and he was going to go by him. I mean, if that's not, I think that's 100% liability. When you're admitting, you're going to run over the car in front of you. And because he turned away, you didn't expect it, you hit him harder. And that's basically what we have here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Mr. Walensky, you use your time, but take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have just three matters to the record. With respect to the distance between Mr. Yonce's vehicle and Mr. Joyce's, at the record in two places, 118, 456 to 57, Mr. Joyce describes his distance as an eighth of a mile. With respect to that northbound orientation of plaintiff's contempt, that was an attempt at cross-examination of Mr. Cooley, the defendant's expert. Mr. Cooley's opinion, from which he did not sway, was that the vehicles were basically in a perpendicular orientation at the time of the collision.
That's something that seems to me would be fairly easy to determine whether a truck comes down and skids along somebody's vehicle or whether it hits them perpendicular. Isn't that fairly easy to determine?
There was a difference of expert opinion on that point. That was a bone of contention. Mr. Cooley did not waver from his view that it was essentially a perpendicular and that there was a bouncing and a slight turning of the Cherokee as the collision continued. With respect to how it got to the north part of that intersection, Mr. Joyce testified that when he saw the buyer vehicle come back, it was making a rapid move and it appeared to him to have oversteered.
Did the truck driver say that he saw the right turn signal?
Both truck driver saw that.
And counsel said that he didn't slow down or put on any brakes. Is that true?
I don't remember that being in the record, Your Honor. They both have him in the turn. The whole point of this...
My concern is if the truck driver observed the vehicle ahead and there was an indication that the vehicle was going to turn right, my concern is did or did not the truck then slow down or put on its brake in anticipation of this move? And there is indication from counsel that he just kept on the truck and it didn't do anything, didn't slow down, didn't turn on the brakes, and was caught by surprise when the car didn't turn right.
That's not the evidence, Ryan. The evidence is, you're correct, that the evidence is, there is no evidence that he broke.
So since there's no evidence that he slowed down, we can assume then he didn't.
The question is, was he in violation of the law of assured clear distance for having not done so?
Well, if there's a discernible object in front of you with an indication of doing something and you do nothing to slow down your vehicle, what does that mean?
The court is assuming.
Assuming what?
That the vehicle ahead is entitled to the assured clear distance. That's the whole point of this case. The whole point of the case is that there's evidence in the record, both factual and expert.
Even if that car was turning right, but the vehicle behind had to slow down in order for the vehicle to turn right.
Not true.
Okay.
Not true as a matter of law.
You don't have to do anything to make sure you don't hit the vehicle turning right.
Not true as a matter of law if the vehicle ahead has departed the path of travel of the vehicle behind.
But that's assuming that it didn't. Is there evidence that the vehicle went off the road completely?
There is. There is in the record by two truck drivers and the expert.
Okay, the one that is ahead looking through the rearview mirror.
He said that he made the turn.
Nice. Made the turn completely off the road.
That's precisely the issue that the jury decided.
Okay.
And the trial court could have granted a new trial only if it found that there was an absence in the record of any evidence that supported that verdict. That's what the whole case is about. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Walensky. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.